Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Ceteris. Ceteris is a cloud-based accounting company based out of Charleston, South Carolina. As a yoga entrepreneur, dealing with your finances, accounting, and tax preparation can be a complete headache. Ceteris specializes in accounting for yoga studios and takes care of all of that work for you, while giving you full access to your financial data and benchmark reporting through their platform, Ceteris Edge. Ceteris Edge was built on top of QuickBooks Online and integrates with MindBody Online. While they offer tax accounting, many of their customers also retain their current CPA and use Ceteris for month-to-month accounting and benchmark reporting. With Ceteris, not only is your accounting and bookkeeping done by a team of experts who know accounting for your business and the yoga industry, but they also have professional response times with a dedicated point of contact that will respond to your emails and requests within 24 hours. It's secure, it's cloud-based, and it's built on a standard platform. It's also mobile. As a yoga teacher, you're on the move all the time. Having the most critical information on the health of your business in the palm of your hand allows for better and faster decision-making. To learn more about Ceteris' yoga accounting and benchmark reporting solution, please visit www.ceteris.com/MBOM, M-B-O-M. That's Ceteris, CETERUS.com/MBOM. If you sign up through MBOM, you'll get 50% off your first 2 months. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by Fave Yogis. Fave Yogis is the newest yoga app designed specifically with yoga practitioners and yoga teachers in mind. It was built out of Santa Monica, California by a practicing yogi and software engineer from MIT. Fave Yogis connects yoga students with their favorite yoga teachers through a simple-to-use app that is free to download on any app store. When Fave Yogis was developed, it was out of a need. How many times have you wanted to find a certain type of class and you haven't been able to do it because MindBody Online only links to particular studios? Fave Yogis allows you as a yoga teacher to go on and put your one-time offerings such as workshops and retreats up on the app, as well as your regular weekly classes. Students can easily find you anywhere in the world. As a yoga practitioner, you can go on there and find different offerings from teachers that you already know about or teachers that you don't know about yet. Fave Yogis is an amazing way to be able to connect with yoga teachers who have the offerings that you're looking for, and as a yoga teacher, to connect with the students who already know and love you, as well as to find new yoga students in your area. You can go ahead and download Fave Yogis, F-A-V-Y-O-G-I-S, off of any app store for free. When you sign up, use the code MBOM and let them know that I sent you. All right, now on to today's episode of the podcast. I am so excited to be joined by Dr. Ariel Foster, who is a physical therapist and a yoga teacher. And on this episode, we dive into Ariel's background in teaching in yoga anatomy. She goes through some of the common miscommunications that yoga teachers often have with anatomy, and we dive into a little bit about shoulder anatomy. We also talk about having more than one brand and that sort of thing. So Ariel is the founder of Yoga Anatomy Academy, as well as Sacred Source Yoga. So she's got a lot of different things going on, similar to what I do. And it was really great to have that conversation about being multi-passionate and how you figure out your brand from there. So lots of great stuff in this episode, and I really, really hope that you guys enjoy it as much as I enjoyed the conversation. So without further ado, here's Ariel. I'm very excited to be joined on the podcast today by Dr. Ariel Foster. Welcome to the podcast today, Ariel.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to be chatting with you today. We're doing a little bit of a unique episode, talking a little bit more deep about anatomy, which is something that I've had requested on the podcast a couple times. So I'm excited that we're going to dive deep into that. But I thought a good place to start would be to back up a little bit and talk about how you first got into yoga and how you first got into yoga anatomy and that sort of thing.
So I had a lot of exposure to yoga growing up. I had and still have a grandmother who was a yoga teacher for many, many years, for about 4 decades. And I was able to take yoga for phys ed credit in high school. And I always loved it. I had a music teacher who was a really close heart friend of mine, and he was also a yoga teacher and a yoga lover. He had studied and lived at Yogaville. And then in college, I was introduced to a yoga teacher, or took classes with a yoga teacher who was Kripalu trained. And her approach just made me absolutely fall in love with yoga. I'd always liked it, but she was just so extraordinary. I really loved that style. And that's what led me to get trained in the Kripalu method, and also to live at the Kripalu Center as a volunteer, as a seva, for many, many months.
That's amazing.
So that's what inspired me to teach. Yeah.
What was that experience like living as a seva there?
It's powerful. It's something that many yoga teachers these days don't have. And I feel like I'm in this in-between generation, certainly not in an ashram. I didn't have the ashram experience, but I also had a truly in-depth lifestyle experience, not just through the training itself, but living at the Kripalu Center, waking up in the morning, doing my seva, chopping vegetables or scrubbing floors, scrubbing toilets, and studying 4 hours of yoga a day or something, but in a voluntary capacity, which is really, really different than a teacher training. So you just show up to these classes and you just love it. It's really powerful.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds like such an incredible experience. And you're right. So many teachers don't have the opportunity or don't take the opportunity to do that kind of stuff these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you start teaching right away?
Teaching right away? Yeah. I started teaching in 2001. And I actually taught for a few years with less than 200-hour teacher training. I did some teacher trainings, but at that time they weren't as structured around the 200-hour. So then I did my 200-hour later, and then I injured myself, and I went on to get my doctorate in physical therapy. Sounds like easier to say than it actually was, but that's the order.
I feel like when you say the word doctorate, it never makes me think easy.
Okay.
So was it the injury that inspired you to get the doctorate, or had you been thinking
100%.
About it? 100%.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you dive into that a little bit? Because I think that that's a really big thing in the yoga industry, is like yoga teachers ending up harming yoga students, or maybe yoga students ended up getting hurt when it's supposed to be healing because they don't understand how they're supposed to move, that sort of thing.
Totally. It's so fascinating to me because there's this incredible hesitation that teachers have around talking about their injury, but it's truly what got me onto my life's path. So it's a blessing in disguise, I suppose. So I had a rotator cuff injury, and the story isn't really that interesting. I just was in a Iyengar-based yoga class one day and down dog for 5 minutes, and I really wanted to get out, but I didn't because I was a little bit ashamed. Some of my students were also in the class, and the teacher was, of course, somebody who I trusted and respected, and I thought, oh, it's just me being lazy. It's just my kapha personality. And the next day, I couldn't lift my arm. So from that unravels a million lessons, and many of which are about listening to my own inner authority, many of which are about whether listening to your body is actually an effective cue. There's so many layers to the things I think about from around injury and yoga. But I don't blame the teacher. I don't blame the style of yoga per se. I really think that at the end of the day, if you're going to move your body, you're going to potentially be in, subject to injury. And we all have bodies and we all move. So as a physical therapist, I see all kinds of things. I see people who come in, certainly many, many yoga teachers come to see me and yoga students come to see me. But I also see just folks who have hurt themselves doing really innocent things.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. I feel like most of my injuries have actually been it's not like I was in some epic skiing, thing where I was flipping and fell. It's I slipped and fell on ice, or I slipped on water. I'm not even joking. When I go to physio, I'm like, I don't even want to tell you how I did this.
Yeah.
I was sleeping and now I hurt.
So I guess what I want to do is just take some of the shame away from really being vocal about whatever injury stuff you're going through. And And that's different than just complaining, oh, such and such hurts, and it's all this one, you know, practice's fault or this one teacher's fault or something like that. But just to say we have a body, we are vulnerable, and then we have a large responsibility in how we take care of that body. And I think also as teachers, we have a responsibility in how we take care of our students. What happened to me was I went to see a physical therapist, or physio as it's called in Canada, and within moments, this was, you know, I was 25 years old maybe, and I couldn't lift my arm for days on end. And within less than 10 minutes, she says, oh, you have a rotator cuff injury. And I just thought at the time that that was a superpower. And I really wanted that superpower because I liked, like, for example, Amanda, you live this really portable life, right? And I thought, well, there's humans all over the world and I could do this all over the world if I needed to. I mean, I could help people anywhere I go. So that was my initial spark, and it was a really long path for me. And even I'd say up until maybe even a year ago, so many years after finishing physical therapy school, I still really was reconciling what the heck I'd gotten myself into.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's a long journey to embark on. And it, you know, it's costly as well. Like, it's not free to do that type of education. So I'm sure there
in
was,
the US.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure there was like many points along the way where you're like, what on earth am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And, now I do see a much clearer path. So nowadays I teach anatomy. I teach online anatomy mentorship that's mostly yoga teachers, but also some yoga students. I feel that there's space for a highly informed voice to help clarify some of the conversations that we're having around yoga and injury, which are, by the way, coming up in a much more public space right now. And it's quite thrilling to be somewhat part of that movement. So I'm quite happy where I am right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I think, like, you know, in my teaching experience, it hasn't happened a lot, but, you know, there's the occasional time where somebody comes up after class and they're like, oh, I have this pain going on, or I'm feeling this, or, you know, this is happening in my body. And for me, I feel like I'm very underqualified to even, like, talk about, you know, what's going on with them, or, you know, touch them. And it's like, they seem to have sort of almost an expectation that I know this. And my immediate response is like, you know, I'm not a physio. I'm not a physical therapist. I'm not a doctor. If you have pain, you should really go see somebody else. And I think that unless you're trained in that, that really should be kind of the process within the yoga industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you hit on two really interesting things right there. One of them is actually something that I think yoga teachers should be thrilled about, which is that you are completely liberated from the responsibility of somebody's pain or backache or sciatica or whatever they're coming to talk to you about. Like, you have full permission to say, you know what, that's not in my wheelhouse, and let me refer you to a physical therapist or a chiropractor or an acupuncturist, et cetera, et cetera. I'm clearly utterly 100% biased towards physical therapy. I think we are the jam on the musculoskeletal system and nervous system and fascial system. But you know what? Not everybody's going to be receptive to that, because in some worlds, especially in the yoga world, chiropractics and acupuncture sound cooler and they sound a little more like alternative, which, you know, sometimes physical therapy seems like a little too mainstream for people. But I've just had such extraordinary benefits from being a patient of physical therapy and seeing the actions and the qualifications firsthand. So yeah, good things happening.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I think that you're so right. Like, as yoga teachers, if we don't feel qualified, we do kind of have this like, okay, it's like almost like this out, like we don't have to sort of deal with that. I think though, there's almost like ego that gets in the way sometimes, where you're like, oh, well, like I want to feel qualified. Like, I want to help them. Like, I want to serve them, and I don't want them to think I'm a bad yoga teacher. And I think that sometimes it comes around to being like, you know, being really honest with what you do and do not know, so that you're not harming them further, and that you can actually, you know, have somebody local in your community that you can send them to, that you can recommend them to.
Yeah. So I totally, I'm with you on that. I think I think it's a little more than just ego. So this is going to give people a sigh of relief if they tend to be a helper. I think a lot of us are just helpers in the yoga teaching world. For sure, we want to be seen as experts. I mean, who doesn't? If you have a profession, but we also really are, we're motivated by wanting to truly help people, and we're motivated also by the true improvements that we've experienced in our own well-being, right? From yoga, mm-hmm. almost all of us. I don't think there's many people out there who are yoga teachers who didn't experience improvements in their well-being from the practice of yoga. So we want to share that. We're enthusiastic. And that's where a lot of it comes from, is just this enthusiasm, as well as a bit of a desire to, yes, be seen as an expert. But I do think it can be liberating to just say, you know what? You said one word there that makes me think that you would really deserve to be seen by an actual professional in this. If you really want my advice, this is my gentle suggestion, something you can try. I don't think it will hurt you. But definitely my biggest advice is to go see a physical therapist.
Yeah, I love that wording around there. And also to you were saying before how I keep calling it physio because I'm Canadian. It's like totally ingrained in me to say physio. But
it's also so much easier to say.
I know, it's like one word instead of two words. But I've done like physio, I've done seen a chiropractor, and I've done acupuncture. And I think that they can all serve different things. But I think whenever there's something that's like happening on my body, I immediately am like, okay, I need to go see like a PT. And I have a really good friend who's a PT, and she's Australian. So she actually couldn't work in Canada, but I mean, she's been trained. She's got a master's, like she's super good at what she does. And I was working with her, summer before last, and I actually slipped hiking. I was going down and I obviously put my hand out to stop me, and it kind of went behind me. So I pulled something in my shoulder, and so I came to work and I was like, man, I can barely move my arm, like I did something. And she like kind of poked and prodded and asked me like three questions, and she was like, yep, I've got it, like I know exactly what's going on. And it was this exact moment that you had when you decided to have that career, where I was like, you actually like just performed like some sort of magic on me, because that would have taken me, I never would have figured out what was going on. I could obviously have stretched it, but yeah, like she just took care of it in like 5 minutes.
Nice. That's so amazing.
So yeah, I'm definitely a big proponent of that. So I'm curious, you know, you got this doctorate and then you started integrating like PT into your yoga practice or your yoga teaching. Is that right?
Well, this is the conundrum I've been in since, you know, graduating, getting my license. I actually don't think that there's tremendous overlap between physical therapy and yoga. I find in the world of physical therapy, like, I'll just say from my own experience that after school, I had been teaching for many, many years, over a decade at that point. And I went, but I felt that as a physical therapist that I had a responsibility to really dive into the profession of physical therapy and go for it 100%. So I worked at a very, very busy clinic, or rather busy clinic. It wasn't like the factory style clinics, but it was a relatively quite busy clinic. And it was just tremendous number of hours and patients every day. And the model of healthcare, at least in the United States, but probably similar around the world, it is not that conducive to really seeing the whole person. It's compartmentalized. So for example, if somebody came in on a workers' comp ticket, so to speak, and they had an ankle sprain at work, then I was under pressure from my bosses at the time to justify every treatment that I did, meaning that I didn't have a lot of freedom in that particular environment to look at someone's back, to look at someone's shoulders, to look at someone's neck, to look at someone's hip, and the role that all of that might have played within the fall itself. So I'm in a much better clinic, and this particular clinic is not as busy. They give us more freedom, more time to get to know our patients. In the beginning, I get a whole hour with patients, and I go there twice a week, and I also run my own clinic. And I think that running the clinic that I run myself, the two afternoons a week, 2 days a week, is just, I get really quick benefits. People tend to feel much better, much faster. Yeah. The visits are longer. It's quiet. Our nervous system can calm down and receive the information in that environment. It's hugely, hugely different experience than being in a hospital setting and all that. So, your question, I think, is more around like, how do I merge the two worlds? So at first I was just teaching yoga and working my butt off, and that was really intense. And then I thought about all of these workshops that I wanted to teach. And so I niched down and developed a number of really cool workshops, some of which I've been teaching for 4, 5, 6 years now. And those are so fun. And then in mid 2015, I'd been percolating a lot of ideas. I had filmed 3 courses for 90monkeys.com, which is Amy Apolides' continuing ed website for yoga teachers. And it's really cool. Mm-hmm. You know, little miniature school. And I kept percolating these ideas around, you know, the future of yoga being online and the future of teaching being online. And I came up with the term Yoga Anatomy Academy. And that's been my kind of main squeeze ever since. I mean, I do everything. I lead retreats. I teach weekly classes. I teach privates. I have my hands in all the pots right now. And I still see physical therapists both in a public and private setting. So I'm really enthusiastic about everything that I do, or otherwise I wouldn't be able to do any of them.
yeah, definitely. Yeah that's a lot of different things. I feel like, I don't know if you call it like multi-passionate or like if you have a term for it, but I have a couple different like loves outside of yoga. So I definitely can relate to that, where you're like, I just can't give up these other things that I like doing. So I'm just going to have a hand in each pot and make it work.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all about streamlining too. Don't get me wrong. So many things in my life are so streamlined, and I look around me and I'm like, oh my gosh, how do other people stand it? It's kind of funny when things are going slowly. For example, my private clinic, you can just make an appointment online. And as long as it's more than 24 hours in advance, I get a little email, you get a little email. It's easy to pay online. It's easy to do all the things online. It's basically paperless. And then my patients at the hospital will be like, but I tried to get an appointment with you, and they were telling me that they need a permission from you. And that after that permission, then I have to call back, and it's really tedious. And I'm on the phone looking at my calendar, and they're offering me options. It's like, it's so, I'm like, oh, why isn't all online right now? But anyway,
yeah, I like honestly couldn't agree more with you. Like there's actually a physio clinic in my hometown in Alberta that I really love, and I can book my massages online. And I'm just like, yep. Like I book way more massages than I ever need. I work for myself. I don't have any benefits that cover massage, yet I'm like, no, I can book it online. Like I'm going to do it. If I have to like call or
Isn't
go through
that,
like, that whole process, it's like, it's just, I don't know. It like deters me a lot more.
Yeah. To go back to the main point of this conversation, the biggest thing that I'm engaged in right now is an online mentorship for yoga teachers and yoga students, which is under the umbrella of Yoga Anatomy Academy. And it's considered a 12-week mentorship because there's 12 lessons, kind of 12 modules, so to speak. It's much more than 12 lessons, but 12 modules that get released week by week. And it's so much fun. I'm getting the greatest questions and the greatest students, and just learning as well as teaching. I have so much fun with doing that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Is it specific to like 12 weeks worth of anatomy type lessons, or what do you cover during the mentorship?
I cover, anatomy. But within that, like there's little bonuses. So I give audio practices, and I'll link to some of my YouTube classes. I have some classes on YouTube that are for the most part therapeutics classes. They're not like, it's not necessarily all of what I teach, but it's the one class that is really good natural light streaming in, and it's only 45 minutes. So I feel like I can put this online. And that one is that I'll pick a theme every week. So I'll guide my students through some pretty complex questions that come up. We have live calls. We, talk about whatever real life situations are happening in their classrooms at that time, or in their bodies sometimes.
Yeah, that's amazing. I feel like there's a lot of benefit to something like that, because I think that, you know, 200 hour trainings are really great. Like, they're a great base. But I think that when you actually start interacting with students, it's like all of a sudden all these questions come up that I feel like you really couldn't have asked. You couldn't have known to ask in your 200 hour because you didn't know they were going to come up for you. So having something where you can be like interacting with someone and talking about, you know, how do I deal with this injury this person's having, or how do I, you know, approach this conversation is, that's really amazing.
Yeah, totally. It's so vital. And yeah, I think that's the future of yoga, is to have these more in-depth conversations for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And so diving a little bit more into the actual anatomy, can you talk a little bit about some of like the biggest things that you see maybe in the yoga world or in the yoga studio setting where anatomy is kind of being missed, like maybe cues that teachers are giving or things that people aren't aware of, that type of thing?
Yes, absolutely. So I think the most audio-friendly one that I'm really pumped about, I'm always teaching this as like a public service announcement within my classes, is the languaging we use around shoulders. So one of the most common cueing languages, cues that I hear around shoulders in yoga classes is to draw your shoulders away from your ears. Also, you might hear, take your shoulders back and down. And there are certain positions where this makes a lot of sense. One of them is chaturanga. And it's not really that your shoulder blades are moving that much. It's that they have to stay neutral so that the effort is very much squeezing back and squeezing down. Because otherwise, the tendency in chaturanga, as you lower down from plank to chaturanga, your shoulders are going to dip forward. It's called an anterior tilt, and they're very often going to protract. So they're going to go, they're going to elevate towards your ears, they're going to tip forward, and they're going to wrap a little bit around the sides of your ribs rather than stay neutral. So the effort has to be back and down, shoulders away from the ears. When your arms are overhead, and there is zero controversy around this, so I really need to say that again. When your arms are overhead, there is zero controversy around this. You do not want to take your shoulders back and down. Your shoulder blades should upwardly rotate. The bottom tip of the shoulder blade will wrap around the sides of your ribs a little bit. So that's called protraction, or it's also known sometimes as abduction. So the shoulder blades moving away from the midline. And yeah, like they have to elevate a little bit. They have to get a little closer to your ears. That doesn't mean your neck is not going to be relaxed. It doesn't mean you have to hold a stiff neck. You can have the arms overhead in a really active, forceful way, even in a handstand, and still have a relaxed neck.
Okay.
So that's my biggest pet peeve that I hear still to this day yoga teachers saying.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense to me. And I was actually, as you were talking, I was like lifting my arms up, which is kind of funny because I'm in like a call booth space and a co-working space. So hopefully nobody's
adorable. I'm in my closet, literally.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
The sound quality. Yeah.
Yeah, the things we do for podcasting. But yeah, that definitely makes sense to me. So I'm just thinking like, so my body, for example, my shoulders tend to like creep up towards my ears. It's been like something I've done my entire life. I think it might be like a protective thing I do without actually thinking about it. Cause I did ballet for a number of years and my teacher was constantly like, relax the shoulders, relax the shoulders. Mm-hmm. So sometimes say I'm in like an Ashtanga class is where it comes up for me the most, is like put my arms up and my shoulders are pretty tight. So it's like hard for me to get my hands together without my shoulders coming up towards my ears. What's like a better cue for teachers to encourage students to relax? Cause I think there is something about like relaxing the shoulders a little bit so they're not totally at the ears without it being like a forceful trying to like draw down and back, which is kind of against what the actual movement should be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's step back a little bit because I think that even though I aimed to be really clear in my languaging, it can still it'll be really abstract for people listening on audio. So if anybody's listening and you're in a position, i.e. not driving, to raise your arm overhead, then go ahead and just raise your arm overhead like you're changing a light bulb, like you're stretching, like you're yawning. And what you'll notice is that the arm and the shoulder blade get close to the ear, right? If you're moving in a natural way, the shoulder blade upwardly rotates, mm-hmm. and the whole thing is going to elevate a little bit. But you can do that. You can yawn and still kind of like wiggle your head and neck, and it won't be stiff. Now, if you have some chronic tightness in the upper part of your shoulders, we don't do this anymore with cell phones, but back in the old days, we used to hold the phone to our ears with our shoulders.
Oh yeah.
And us old school people.
I'm old enough to be a part of that.
yay. So the phone to the ear action, your upper trap engages, or your levator scap, there's a couple different muscles that could engage. They do tend to be a little stiff and tight on many people. But I would say that instead of just like reminding yourself constantly to relax them, think back to why the heck are these muscles so tight on me in the first place? And the most likely reason for a tight muscle almost anywhere in your body, whether it's, I'll give another example in a moment, but one of the most common reasons is a weakness on the opposite side. So if you are having a lot of, or even weakness within that muscle itself, so your upper traps might actually, they could either be weak, or your lower traps could be weak, or any of the other muscles that stabilize your shoulder blades could be, and I'm not calling you weak, by the way. sounds so rude. I apologize.
I'm not offended.
But just relatively speaking, one relative to the other. So maybe you have done a lot of overhead work in yoga, but you haven't done a lot of like kind of pulling work. Mm-hmm. Maybe it would be beneficial for you to just hang a little bit, or to hang and pull, or maybe to just go back to cobra rather than upward facing dog and really work the shoulder blades squeezing towards one another, pressing down your back, lifting your heart. So these are things that I think could be really profound in helping you undo that pattern. So what we call it in the US anyway, in physical therapy, would be neuromuscular re-education, or teaching motor control, or there's a couple other words and language that we use, but it's not just about like pure strength and fitness. It's about kind of getting everything to work in harmony.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that for me personally, and I'm assuming that somebody else out there listening probably has the same thing, because I think that having like tightness in the shoulders, or rounded shoulders, or shoulders that creep up towards your ears is really common. But one of my favorite yoga teachers and the studio that I work for back home, he actually installed like a slat wall kind of bar. Like, so basically we can do kind of like gymnastic style stuff, or like mm-hmm. hanging and that sort of thing on the one wall in the studio. And so we have this one class that happens once or twice a week, and he'll make us do hangs. And it was so humbling for me, because I do so much yoga that I am strong when I push, but you know, hanging, pulling is this action that just completely wipes me out. It's so hard for me. So yeah, I think you're definitely right about that for me personally.
I know. Actually, I taught aerial yoga for 2 years, in part because I knew I needed more of that pulling action in my life and that hanging action. So aerial yoga has a really athletic and as well as a kind of a gymnastic component to it. But there are also components of it that are therapeutic. And I like to think that my classes had a bit more of that therapeutic bent. Such an interesting subject. I have another anatomy thing that I think I can explain well over audio as well, if you want.
Yeah, definitely.
So another thing that we're doing many times in yoga is, or at least in vinyasa yoga many, many times, is rolling over the top of the foot. And I think that we are possibly between the jump backs or the slide backs and rolling over the feet, possibly contributing to bunions in many cases, helix valgus. So when the hips are, many times our hips tend to be a little bit externally rotated naturally. So if you're standing in a totally relaxed way, your toes are going to be turning outward a bit. And if you practice your downward facing dog with the toes turning out, if you practice plank, chaturanga with the toes just a little bit out, heels a little bit in, You will then roll over more on the medial aspect of your big toe or your great toe, and you'll push that toe towards all the other toes. So I think, and this is less common than the shoulder thing, but I think a lot of people are kind of creating a habit of rolling over the inside of the big toe, and it's basically causing a mechanical force that will push you into hallux valgus, which is the fancy Latin name for a bunion.
Interesting. I had no idea that that was like something that could happen because of that.
Sure. Repetitive stress injury. I mean, if you're going to, for example, yoga is 5 to 7 days a week or an Ashtanga Mysore practice, and you're not really conscious of the transition itself, the rollover, then you end up on the inside of your toes and you will absolutely create these forces that are not that different from wearing like a pointy toed high heel for 8 hours.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think like in the yoga world, I feel like a lot of people are aware that they need to take care of their body and that's why they come to yoga. And so I know for me, like when I stopped working corporate and I started, you know, like transitioned my career and stuff like that, started teaching yoga, I was like way more like, I'm just going to wear Nikes and Birkenstocks and, you know, take care of my feet. And never thought about the fact that like, you know, rolling over my toes in my yoga practice could actually be something that's harmful to them.
Well, that's just something to be mindful of. You may not be doing it at all in that way that's putting that kind of force on it. But if you are curious as a practitioner and you're not sure that your yoga teacher would know enough or be able to see that or distinguish that, then set up a video and set up your phone in a way that you can literally just video your toes and see where they go as you roll over. It also makes a difference if you chronically choose to roll over one foot first and then the other. That can have implications up the chain. So alternate or do both at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. A yoga teacher actually told me that a couple years ago in my practice. She's like, you're creating like unevenness in your hips by always like rolling over your right foot and then your left foot.
She's like, bingo.
You need to do both or switch it up.
Yeah. And I have just one final anatomy tip that's really quick that I think a lot of people don't know, but the biggest part of our spine that rotates outside of the neck is the thoracic spine. The lumbar spine has almost no rotation to it. So when you are teaching twists or practicing twists, it's really, really helpful to emphasize what's going on in the upper back. So for example, if you're laying on your back and you're going to take a twist, you can draw your knees, as long as this is comfortable for you, as close into the chest as possible, and then let them drop over to the side. Your twist may not, quote unquote, look as deep as if you just kind of bend the knees, feet flat to the floor and flop them over to the side. You may not get your shoulder to the ground, but you're going to be emphasizing the twist in the part of the body that needs it rather than in the lumbar spine. Because by drawing the knees close into the chest, you're usually more or less locking out the lumbar spine from the rotation.
Interesting. So when you cue that, then it's cueing to draw the knees in further and then allow it to fall over to the right or the left from there and not to worry about the shoulder?
Well, for most people, almost no matter what the spinal, you know, side-lying spinal twist looks like, it will be difficult for many people to get the opposite shoulder down to the ground because that requires essentially 90 degrees of rotation in your spine, and it just doesn't happen. So you're kind of compromising one thing or the other. I also don't cue stack the pelvis or stack the knees or anything. I might cue like energetically push that top knee in the opposite direction of the shoulder, but I'm not really going to cue it on terms of like some kind of geometric plane. So whether the shoulder comes down or not is much less relevant to me than where the twist is happening and the quality of the twist.
Okay, interesting. And so when you're looking at somebody's body actually doing that, what are some of the key things that you're looking for?
Well, first of all, a supine twist I'll do usually in the very beginning as a warm up or at the very end as part of a cool down. It's not really going to be stop, drop, and twist in the middle of the practice most of the time. Although maybe that would be a fun workshop.
I love twists, so I'm in.
Yeah. I just look around and I'm just curious about bodies. I look around and I see who's benefiting, who's kind of dropping into it, without any effort, and who's got some restrictions. And sometimes with the folks who've got restrictions, you know, obviously I'll go to them first as a yoga teacher and I'll say, try this, do that, add this blanket here, make it more comfortable for you. But even for some of the folks who drop in really easily, many times people who have a lot of mobility or excess mobility will be tight in certain tissues. And so for someone like that, I might have them slide their arm up a little bit towards their ear rather than straight out to the side, because that will help to open up pecs for them, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to look at it on a case-by-case basis, individual to individual.
Okay. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. I was asking because I was thinking about, like, sometimes, so I guess when I'm teaching twists, some of the things I look for is, like, you know, obviously how easy it looks for them. Cause I think you can kind of tell, like, the people who sink into it right away, they close their eyes, they're quite comfortable. Like, they turn their head the opposite direction quite easily. And then there's the other people who kind of look like you're almost torturing them. And often one of the first things I do look for is if their shoulder is getting down to the mat or not, and how I can assist them doing that. So if that's not something that we should necessarily be focusing on, I guess I was just curious what else to sort of look for.
Yeah, I'd say don't necessarily focus on that, or don't focus on that too much. I like the fact that you look for grimaces or not. I think that's a good thing to look for.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think that just, like, tells a lot about what somebody's experiencing. Like, yep. I know for me, that's, like, very much, like, you know, if I get into, like, Go Mukhasana, for example, is one for me. Like, I have really tight outer hips. It's, like, not a comfortable pose. And I really have to be like, relax your face. Like, don't give the teacher the death glare. Like, it's not that bad type thing. So it's something I look for as a teacher, because I know that we just do it. It's like our reaction to what's happening in our body. It's like, oh, I'm going to, like, show it in my face as I try to find comfort within this pose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. Are there any other anatomy principles or lessons or things that you want to share with people who are listening?
I think those three nuggets are really good, but I highly recommend checking out my yogaanatomyacademy.com/blog. You'll get a lot of other tidbits that I, you know, that I write about, and just email me if you have any questions about any anatomy stuff, info@yogaanatomyacademy.com.
Awesome. And where else can people go to find you online?
Sure. Well, definitely that Yoga Anatomy Academy website, but I have more of a personal website, which is sacredsourceyoga.com. I'm pretty active on Facebook and Instagram, facebook.com/sacredsourceyoga and Yoga Anatomy Academy. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. I have a quick question for you, because you've got these two sort of branches in your business, and it's also something that I kind of have in mind. How have you found, like, the branding with that? Like, have you been able to put a clear distinction between what you do with Sacred Source Yoga and what you do with Yoga Anatomy Academy?
Oh, this is a really rich question, and I'm so glad you asked. Yeah. So another one of my passions, even though I by far do not consider myself an expert, is business. And I already talked earlier about streamlining and how we can streamline just different parts of our lives and different parts of our business that are good for us, and they're good for the people around us, and they allow us to do more good things in the world. Branding is a big challenge for me, because I'll tell you what my current conundrum is. I don't have any issue having kind of a personal site, a personal website, personal social media stuff, plus then the Yoga Anatomy Academy. Sure, it's a lot to handle, but it's not necessarily a problem in itself. I do think that a big challenge that I'm facing right now is I bought the domain sacredsourceyoga.com in 2006. And it sounds like a yoga studio at the time, and this may be hard for people to remember, but at the time, even a lot of the big name teachers had websites that were not their names. Like, I'm thinking a lot of the people I looked up to in the Anusara world, which, like, they had, like, Opening to Grace or flowwithgrace.com. instead of SianaSherman.com or whatever it was. So I had sacredsourceyoga.com. I still have it. It's still my main email address, et cetera. But I can't tell you the number of times people have come up to me and based on the fact that I'm really active on social media, promoting my retreats, promoting my workshops, promoting yogaanatomyacademy.com, where people come up to me and they're like, oh, so you're not working as a physical therapist anymore? And I'm like, no, I am. and where I have to like, you know, remind people like, dude, I have a doctorate. Like I invested in this. I'm going to continue on this path. I'm going to continue to be a student and a practitioner. And this was not something I just did to boost my yoga teaching career. So I'm in a conundrum of how do I rename myself, rename my website? Do I name it Dr. Ariel Foster? Is that implying that I'm a medical doctor? I don't want to imply that. So I'm in the midst of this branding conundrum, but I recently changed not the URL, but the name of my Facebook page from Sacred Source Yoga parentheses Ariel to Dr. Ariel Foster Physical Therapy and Yoga. So Facebook was an easy way to do that without hurting anything. I lost like 3 or 4 followers, but then I quickly regained 3 or 4 followers. So I think that owning who I am and defining who I am not. So people who might have been following that page just because it had the word yoga in it and then were like, who is Dr. Ariel Foster? Then they can go their own way without issue. But people who are like, oh, here's somebody who has this depth of experience, this depth of knowledge, and she does yoga and physical therapy. I want to follow what's going on with her. That's the people I want to be hanging out with anyway. You know?
Yeah, definitely. That's for sure something that I understand. Like I bought the domain for my name. So I have AmandaKingsmith.com and it was I bought it as like a travel blog when I first went to South America back in 2014. And my boyfriend and I started a travel podcast and I was like, well, I'm not going to blog about travel on this personal website of mine when we've got like this travel resource website and podcast. And yeah, it's been kind of this long journey. As I started MBOM, I was like, oh, I'll just put it under my personal brand. And then I was like, no, this is so different. And it's always hard and evolving. Like it's always something that you think it's a good idea 1 minute and then it evolves to something else. And yeah, I can definitely relate to that.
Yes, that's refreshing hearing from you. Thank you.
You're not the first yoga teacher I've talked to about that either. So it's always nice to know that we exist out there.
Yeah. This kind of relates to a gift that I have for your audience members. Is this a good time?
Yeah, definitely.
Bring that up.
Okay. Yeah.
So earlier this year, I was involved in a 200-hour teacher training. And I think that everybody who's involved in a 200-hour teacher training just like aches afterwards because you know how quickly those things go by. Even if they're 9 months, it's just so much information. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I started to get all these emails from the students that were like, hey, can you help me with my yoga resume? What would you do with this studio? They're telling me this, but I want this. So I kind of just sat down one Saturday with my iPhone. I had already created this big Google document on like the, you know, my experiences in the business of yoga that were pretty fundamental. They were really geared towards like previous students I'd had and some of my mentees who were basically brand new students brand new teachers. And so it's geared towards brand new teachers, but I think there's lessons in it for anybody who's having a low point. And it's just an online course that I made completely for how to like repay your teacher training, how to build your business, and how to actually thrive as a yoga teacher. So it's not probably the level of business expertise that, for example, you might offer, but I'm just giving it away to anybody who's listening to this. So if you want that, you can go to yogaanatomyacademy.com/MBOM, MBOM, and amazing. I'll give it away to you.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that.
I don't care. It's a gift of love to these students and so students/teachers. And so I'll share the love.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Awesome. I feel like we've covered so much. I really, really appreciate your time today. I feel like I could just keep talking to you about business and anatomy and being multi-passionate and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. But well, things are always evolving. And if you ever have any more anatomy questions, just give me a shout out and I'd love to be back on anytime.
Definitely.
All right. I hope that everyone out there listening enjoyed the episode and learned a lot. If you have any questions about anatomy, definitely feel free to reach out to Arielle. She's super awesome and she'll definitely be, you know, willing to answer your questions. She's in our private Facebook group in Yoga Business Badasses. You can join that if you want to ask questions or reach out to her personally. She also has an awesome freebie for listeners of the podcast. So if you visit yogaanatomyacademy.com/MBOM, you'll get a free online business class. So go ahead and sign up for that. There'll be links for it on the show notes at www.mbomyoga.com. As always, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And thank you so, so much for listening.